Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Ben Standing is with us, as he is every Monday and Friday at 12 noon. We have made it through the NFL draft. 9 new players, a lot more in terms of undrafted free agent signings after the draft. Washington's got a lot of new players on this roster, and now the countdown to actual games. Yes, there are mini camps. Yes, there are OTAs. Yes, there are you know, games to be played in the summer around training camp. But it will be September of 2024 when we really start to learn what they've done here in the offseason. But with that said, we will start with Ben and just kind of get, you know, now that it's completed, what some of your big takeaways were. And I'll just start with this, you know, based on kind of where they picked him and where he was projected Who was the biggest value pick for Washington of the nine that they selected?
Yeah, you know, I had to go through this exercise for the sort of the templated story that I wrote after day three. And it was that was a question. It was sort of hard because, like, it didn't feel like any of their picks were like, wow, they got this guy in the fourth round and people were projecting him in the second. But, you know, I think like a guy like Johnny Newton, like in the mock draft world, like, you know, Denton can attest, like some people had him going like 21 to the Dolphins as a replacement for Christian Wilkins. Others would have said early second. So I don't know that he was like great value per se, but that said, clearly some teams really liked him a lot as a player. He was viewed as the number two defensive tackle in the draft. And, you know, to me, you know, we've talked about this a lot here over the course of the last 2 or 3 months, including with free agency and the draft. Washington's plan was not to put together a roster that was going to contend in 2024. It was to put together a roster that was credible for this year and set them up moving forward to get more aggressive down the line. This draft with that pick emphasized this was a best player available approach. Every single position they addressed in the draft was a need, but was defensive tackle for 2024 the bigger need over other positions? Of course not. But for 2025, absolutely, because John Allen's contract is up in the air. And I think that was, for those who still haven't understood that, I think that pick should have been the hammer to the head that said, we're trying to get the best players. If you go for need too much, you may be taking a lesser player to address an issue. Well, here's the, after other than quarterback, once they took Daniels and maybe running back, every single position on the team was a need. So I thought that was, again, I value maybe a little much because he was viewed in that range, but clearly was a guy that had a lot of fans. A lot of people thought he would go in the first round.
Yeah, I think that's a point that I think much of the fan base now understands. That pick was the one, and right when they made it on Friday night, Denton and I both said, that is best player on the board. Although, to be fair, and you just pointed this out, other than quarterback after Daniels and maybe running back, every position was a need because they only have two starters and it's a rotational position to begin with, and we know what John Allen's contract status is. Do you have a sense at all after Jaden Daniels who they're most excited about?
Nah, it's one of those deals where it's like, you know, they're all your kids, can't pick your favorite. You know, I mean, I'm sure obviously just in general in terms of what imagining what a roster can do, the guys in the second round are going to give you more juice than the guy in the seventh. But, you know, I think for each, you know, each round is its own story and each, you know, so I don't know. I mean, like in general, leading into the draft, Mike Sanders, still the cornerback from Michigan, you heard a lot of people saying that's like my favorite player. Like, I love this guy. We heard Nick Saban on the broadcast, the ESPN broadcast, say, you know, pound for pound, he might be the best player in the draft. I mean, we're talking about a 5'9", buck 80 corner, but it just gave that Michigan team so much life, not just good play, but being a leader and that, all that. So, you know, to a certain degree, maybe him, because it feels like that's like one of those picks that's both a talent play as well as a culture play. So perhaps him, but, you know, I'm sure they would, you know, the earlier picks obviously have more excitement, but beyond that, I don't know if any one pick was, you know, had them going more jazz than the other one.
I mean, Peters did admit that they looked to move up to get Johnny Newton because they didn't think he'd fall to 36.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, like I said, I mean, a guy who, you know, could have been a first, you know, like we all were believing, and I think accurately, that if they're going to trade up into the first round, it would have been for an offensive tackle. But if they had traded up just purely based on talent, clearly sounds like Newton would have been a guy that they would have been happy with. So yeah, obviously, you know, again, the top guys at your draft are going to be the ones you get more excited about for the potential than, you know, a special teams linebacker you take on day three. Sure.
What do you think they see in Brandon Coleman, a tackle guard combination of both, and how far down the road before they think he'll be ready?
Well, I mean, definitely a tackle. I mean, that's what they presented him as. Some in the league view him better at guard, but they clearly stated he was a tackle. I think from an athletic perspective, he's really impressive in that regard. And the question will be, I guess, similar to the ones we had with Brandon Scherff and Sam Cosmi, is just ultimately, you know, is that, does he work out at tackle? It's one of those things where it's like, it can be a fairly high floor kind of a pick, because as we again saw with those other two guys, you can transition them into guard if it doesn't work. But they are saying they're looking at him as tackle. And, you know, again, everybody has their own opinions on this, but in talking to people around the league post-draft, I didn't really hear too many issues about that pick, viewing him as a tackle. Some say, again, they prefer him at guard, but not impossible that he'd be a tackle. So, you know, I think obviously the question is, how close is he to playing, you know, meaningful snaps in an NFL game at tackle? That's what the offseason program is all about for them to figure out. So there's that. But, you know, when people say they didn't draft a tackle, that's not how they see it. Whether they're right, ultimately, you know, time will tell.
Right. And there was likely an attempt to draft a tackle higher in the draft, but couldn't pull it off. We don't know why they couldn't pull it off. We just have to assume that either, you know, the team wanted too much, or there wasn't a team willing to do it with them.
The you know, we talk about groupthink. We talked a lot about that during this whole coaching search and the quarterback conversation. You know, the left tackle spot is another example where groupthink is just like, people get an opinion in their head and can never shake it. Certainly, if you were putting together a roster, left tackle is a very important position, right? Nobody argues that. But to the degree that people wanted Washington to trade multiple picks, give up a kidney, sell the naming rights to the stadium, whatever it was, to get this position is so insane to me. Like, I keep arguing with people on Twitter, which has put me in the insane category as well for doing that. I agree. But I'm like, look, if you want to guarantee that they could have gotten one of those tackles, then you have to give up your 2025 first round pick. You do that, you guaranteed to trade up. No argument. If you're willing to do that, well, then good for you, because I think Dan Snyder and David Tepper would do that too. I wouldn't, knowing that this team is probably going to have a top 10 pick next year. We just saw what happened with Carolina when they got over-aggressive and traded away a first-round pick to turn into the number one pick. They need a left tackle. I don't think anybody argues that, or at least there are questions about it, right? But everything has a price, and they decided, I presume, that in trying to move up for a couple of these tackles, you know, in the back half of the first round, that either the price wasn't for them, or, and this is an important notion that people don't want to listen to,
right,
the other teams may not have wanted to trade out. I know it's crazy that they should just do what Washington wants because you want them to snap your fingers and say, get a tackle, but, like, the other teams have their own agendas. I actually do think that the Commanders probably got screwed a bit, because when the first 14 picks are all offense, right, and a lot, and some of those were tackles, and then the tackles keep getting pushed up, I think if it had been a more reasonable split, like, you know, 16 offense, 16 defense, like, you know, kind of like normal, you know, more reasonable view, I think then it's probably a decent chance that one of these tackles is sitting there at 36, or at least, you know, maybe you trade up three spots at the end of the first or the beginning of the second. They were having to look into trading up into the teens to get something done, because the run on tackles went pretty hard. And, you know, I think in a normal year, you probably get that pushback. But in a year where apparently the league didn't like the defensive guys, you know, that became less of an option.
Real quickly, who do you think they wanted in the first round? You think it was Mims or Morgan?
I was told it was three things. One, I was told they tried to trade into the teens. If that's true, then that was probably for Mims. The Bengals were, you know, you never can say for sure, but the Bengals took Mims, and that was sort of a logical landing spot. So you probably had to trade up in front of 18 to get a guy who has, like, insane upside but only had 8 career starts. From there, Morgan, I was told, was somebody they wanted. I think Tyler Guyton himself, if I saw this correctly on Twitter, said that he was told that the Commanders and Patriots both tried to trade up for him. He ended up going to Dallas after Dallas traded back. So, you know, I don't know if they were that indiscriminate that they were looking at three different guys and willing to take any of them. So who can say? I don't know for sure, but those were the three names that, you know, I heard slash would make the most sense.
You know, the pick right before Johnny Newton at 35, the Falcons picked a defensive tackle as well, a Clemson defensive tackle. I'm wondering if Johnny Newton had gone to Atlanta in the pick right before their pick. Do you think either DeJean or McKinstry was a possibility there? I mean, you have any idea what would have come at 36 had Newton not been there?
No. You know, I could speculate all day long, but clearly they like Sanders still. Again, we heard Saban praise him. I've had other people say, like somebody else told me that they thought Sanders still was like basically their favorite cornerback in the whole class, including guys that went in the first round. So I kind of imagine that why, and like, you know, Peter, I think, discussed this. My brain is mush, but I think he discussed this as well. But like at the Michigan Pro Day where Washington was there to watch, you know, in theory, J.J. McCarthy, that apparently Sanders still just absolutely blew everybody away. Like not just as in the defensive drills that he was taking, he was
best
running
route
routes for McCarthy.
Yeah.
And was like, somebody told me he was easily the best receiver on the field in a draft where Michigan had guys get drafted at receiver. So something tells me they felt they knew where he would go off the board and would have waited for him rather than taking DeJean or McKinstry. But, you know, again, in a best player available situation, like you could literally anybody who went in that range, and I'd be like, okay, sure, I kind of get it.
Talking to Ben Standig here, Monday following 3 days of the NFL draft, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 9 picks, several undrafted free agents. So what stood out from that list to you?
Well, you got to start with the quarterback, right? I mean, you know, yes, while technically Sam Hartman wasn't drafted, I definitely was saying, like, I won't be surprised at all if they draft a second quarterback, in part because of the nature of the position. Again, when you're looking ahead to 2025, other than Jaden Daniels, none of the other quarterbacks that were on the roster are going to be here next year, most likely, right? Not Mariota, not Driscoll, not Jake Fromm. So you need, you know, you always need to make sure you have options there. And, you know, a quarterback that goes undrafted, you know, you can't look at that and say, oh, he could be the next thing. No. Right? Quarterbacks who go undrafted, that's very rarely a scenario where people say, you know, it turns into something good. Of course, like Brock Purdy was essentially an undrafted free agent as the literal last player in the draft a couple of years ago, and he's turned into what he's turned into. But, you know, I mean, I think that one is probably the most interesting. Everybody else, like, you know, this cornerback from Colorado State, whose name I don't have in front of me, they gave a pretty huge signing bonus to, and his measurables and his 40 time were really impressive. And that's a room where, you know, after the first four-ish guys, like, it's kind of open, right? So, you know, if you guys have the name there, apologies for not having it off the top of my head. But
yeah, it's the kid, Chig, Anusim or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, that one's interesting, you know, but again, we're talking about a guy who went undrafted. So, it's interesting to see. And, you know, in other years, we might be like, well, you know, undrafted free agents, we'll see. For this team, I think everything is fairly open from a roster perspective. So, you know, I one of the exercises that I want to do this week is sit down and go look at the roster now and see, you know,
all 53 coming.
Well, maybe something like that. But at least see, like, okay, let's just see now where are the positions where, you know, like running back, for example, Brian Robinson, Austin Eckler, Chris Rodriguez. Sometimes they only keep three. That could be the whole room right there. We can call it a day. They did add a couple of undrafted free agents, including a running back from USC, which you would logically think has some Cliff Kingsbury influence. So maybe that's something to watch. I think it's Austin Jones, I want to say. But, you know, that to me is always interesting. You never want to draft a player into a spot where there's no room. I don't think they did that. But beyond that, then, you know, where, you know, who are some vets that might be possibly in trouble, you know, again, months away from training camp. And then, you know, where some of these undrafted guys possibly have an opportunity.
Talking to Ben. So what's your reaction to, you know, the relative athletic score number? Washington, based on that relative athletic score, had the best draft. The number of team captains that were selected in this draft. Just the absolute overwhelming gushing praise for this draft. Where do you come in on that?
Is it, I mean, you probably looked at more of the broad reaction than I have. I felt like I saw some people question it because they largely because of the tackle situation. But yes, in terms of things like the team captain's angle was something we wrote about last week. We did a story about the guide to Adam Peters at the draft, understanding what they look for. And San Fran, and he was very adamant on getting team captains with the 49ers. And certainly that played out here. That's obviously a leadership culture, you know, locker room chemistry type of deal. The athletic testing, sure. I mean, needless to say, having good athletes is typically a pretty good idea. The question is, you know, what's the mental component there, right? I mean, I was just watching the 76ers play yesterday, and I'm sure Kelly Oubre tests off the charts athletically, but he's never been a high IQ basketball player, right?
Yeah.
So that's all relative. But again, I guess that's where that goes in with the captain thing, right? If you're highly athletic and you were a captain, right, that seems like a pretty good combination. But sure, I mean, I think it's pretty good. Like I think what's so weird to me about the criticism that, and I know you're saying broadly it's not, and maybe I'm too
weird. I mean, I think I counted more A's and A-pluses for this draft from – you know, those people willing to step out and grade the draft a few days after it. I mean, there were a lot of positive grades of the 2020 draft. Lots of them. Lots of A's, B's, B pluses.
The general reason I mean, beyond the fact that we can't grade a draft for 3 to 5 years for the obvious reasons, let's see. But the reason why I don't put too much stock in these grades is that it's all based on the person who's grading them view of the players. If you think Johnny Newton was great, well, then that's a great pick. If you think Johnny Newton, what was the point? Then that wasn't good, right? If you think Luke McCaffrey really helps them because they didn't have a slot receiver, they needed some more size, and you had him ranked high, great. But if you were one of the people that had him ranked on your board around like 150, which I saw pre-draft, then you probably don't think it's great. So that's why those things are kind of like, but like in general, they have a ton of needs. Every single pick addressed one of them. Like I said, by and large, it was hard to view like what was the best value. Simultaneously, it was hard to view like what was the biggest reach. I mean, maybe Ben Sinnott would be that one. I know our guy Dane Brugler had him as like his sixth rated tight end with a fourth round grade. He goes in the second, but Daniel Jeremiah had him ranked, I think, sort of top 50 player, and others I've spoken with, you know, like that pick as well. So it's all relative to what they had. But based on the lists that are out there, it is not surprising to me that Washington scored high because, again, it didn't seem like there was any, like, massive reaches or anything. And most of the players were in the range of where people had them projected. Like, one perfect example is Brandon Coleman. You know, some questions there. What is he going to be? My guy, Dane Brugler, rated him the number 66 prospect. They took him at number 67. So when I read Dane's write-up about his favorite drafts and Washington was in the top 10, he noted, well, see, I like that guy.
They agreed with me.
You're a Brandon Coleman guy?
No, I just said they agreed with me,
so
they had a good draft.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, so that's why those things I think are always, like with a lot of the draft conversation, it's cute, it's fine, it's fun, doesn't always mean much, and this would be, I think, in general, an example of that.
All right, so that leads me to this. Back to the offensive line, because I do think that is the one pushback area with this draft. Everybody else seems to be just thrilled, and adults are in charge, and they know what they're doing, and they've got a plan, and that sounded like Vinny. There's reason to celebrate, many people believe, after this weekend. But the offensive line is still a big question. So what comes next? What does the post-draft free agent market for offensive linemen look like?
Yeah, and just wanted to say, like, part of my frustration over the last 48 hours with the left tackle talk is that it is so narrow-minded. The offensive line has questions. One position is not the question. I mean, we're just going with Nick Allegretti as the guy. He was a backup in Kansas City. He did play in the Super Bowl. He played admirably with a significant injury. But I'm just saying, it's not Russ Grimm that we know of. And Andrew Wiley was clearly, I think he was better as the season went along. And, but like, again, it's not John Jansen at right tackle. So I think they have three spots where it's a question versus everybody's yelling that they didn't get a left tackle. I think that part of the word it's misguided. But in terms of the what's left, yeah, I mean, look, here's what I would say in general. There's obviously, when you get to a certain point in free agency, it becomes a buyer's market, and teams decide, you know what, we'd rather wait, rather than pay this individual this kind of money, we would rather wait, see what the draft offers us, and then come back. Mekhi Becton would have been a guy who people were saying right after the draft, hey, that's somebody Washington should go get. He ends up signing a one-year deal to be the backup tackle in Philadelphia. Now, I was told that that was in part because he wants to work with the Eagles at line coach, who's viewed as, like, the best guy in the league and blah, blah, blah. I would imagine he's taking a starting job for comparable money if available. So it leads me to assume that there probably weren't or none that no situations that he likes. And that's one of the guys who is viewed as one of the better options available in free agency. The fallacy that Washington should have dealt with this when real free agency started is so silly. This was a really bad year for tackles. The one that was considered the best was Tyron Smith, who is so obviously historic career. He's so unreliable from a health perspective. The Jets spent the 11th pick in the draft partly on to ensure they had a backup should he get hurt. And that was the best guy. So there's guys like DJ Humphries out there. I know people keep mentioning Charles Leno. That not only is that not an option because you don't bring a guy back, but I don't think we know Leno's even going to continue playing after hip surgery and the career that he's had. So don't think about him. But they're really not. I mean, anybody who's less out there at this point is relatively a jag, right? A guy that, like, sure, you know, sort of like when Washington signed Donald Penn a few years ago when Trent Williams was holding out. I mean, I don't know that there's people out there who are definitively so much better than Cornelius Lucas that it's going to make a massive difference. There's no savior out there. People who think that is the case are just wrong. So, you know, they're guys. We'll see if they decide they need to get one. Like, I don't know who the third tackle – wait, who's the third tackle? Am I forgetting someone? If it's not Brandon Coleman just because he's a rookie –
Trent Scott.
You know.
Trent Scott.
Okay, so I'm saying, like, could you do better than Trent Scott? Yes. Could you do better than Cornelius Lucas? I mean, maybe, I guess. I would say, like, you know, a guy like Humphries, who was with the Cardinals, right, and he was there when Cliff Kingsbury was there, like, that type of connection I could see maybe being like, all right, I know this guy as the OC – let's bring him in, if assuming that Kingsbury thought, he was good. So if there's a connection to Kingsbury or Peters or Quinn, I get that. Beyond that, somebody tell me what the better plan that they should have done at this point, going back to free agency, and I will submit that that's what they should have done. I have not seen that plan. I don't know what that plan was. So.
There's going to be another offseason probably to go before we can seriously consider contention for a Super Bowl, at least one more. So this is hopefully a big foundation draft, but only time will tell. Thanks. Appreciate it as always.
Always a pleasure. See ya.
There is some interesting NFL news with a team within the division, which I will talk about when we come back. But also your chance now, 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. What'd you like? What didn't you like from the Washington draft? Phone lines are open, 301-230-0980. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, the team980.com. We're also free and live on the Odyssey app.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/AcrossAmerica.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.